Elizabeth Cabell is an associate counsel for the Freedom From Religion Foundation and has been a part of the foundation since 2012. She received her bachelor's degree in English from the University of Florida in 2005 and her Juris Doctor in 2009 from Tulane University Law School. So please welcome Elizabeth Cabell.
Hello. Okay, my early birds. So I'm up first, and like Gwen said, I'm here from the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which is a nonprofit that is actually right down the street. So welcome to Madison. I think the weekend looks awesome, and it looks like you guys are in for a lot of very entertaining, very uplifting programming. So I'm just going to anchor us here with something super legal and technical and also very depressing and alarming. So what I'm going to talk about today is the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, a Supreme Court case, a decision that came down last year, and what it means for the future of civil rights laws, anti-discrimination laws around the country. And so just the way that I do is I'm going to explain a little bit of background on the case. I'm going to talk about what was argued, what ultimately the Supreme Court accepted and what they said, and then I'm going to try to sort of explain what that means for the future and what's next in the courts, what's going on, what's still working its way through the courts, what could happen next. Then I'd like to leave this case and this topic, I joke, but it is very alarming and it's terribly important to any of us, the many of us who care deeply about the neutral application of our secular laws and who care about civil rights and especially LGBTQ rights in this country. And so I'd like to take up half my time sort of talking at you, and I'd like to save half the time if possible for questions and conversation and some engagement from the audience. So if you have questions, then fear not, there will be plenty of time for us to sort of have a conversation about this. So. Okay, so this is a picture of Charlie Craig and David Mullins. This is the couple behind the case. So many of you are probably familiar with this case, the infamous gay wedding cake case. The facts that gave rise to this case started way back in 2012 in the state of Colorado, before the Obergefell decision, making marriage equality, holding that marriage equality is a fundamental right for all Americans, including LGBTQ Americans. So this couple were actually marrying out of state in Massachusetts at the time, but they were planning a reception in their home state of Colorado. Excuse me. Same-sex marriage at the time was actually still illegal in Colorado. Their wedding venue coordinator sent them to a bakery called the Masterpiece Cake Shop for a wedding cake for that reception, and the couple and one of the men's mother visited that bakery. They walked in. It was probably a less than 90-second exchange where the owner came out to meet them, quickly realized obviously they were a same-sex couple shopping for a wedding cake, indicated to them he doesn't sell wedding cakes to same-sex couples, and ultimately the couple filed a complaint with the state agency that enforces Colorado's anti-discrimination law, the Colorado Civil Rights Division. And they alleged that the bakery discriminated against them on the basis of their sexual orientation, which at the time and now is a violation of Colorado's civil rights law. So, this case worked its way through, this case worked its way through the administrative process, which is boring, it doesn't matter, but it's an administrative process that's like, mirrors a court process in that there are appeals and there's review at several stages. Ultimately, the case can be
the loser, which in this case was the bakery at every step of the way, a Colorado Civil Rights Commission found that this violated Colorado law, that it was discrimination based on sexual orientation. The loser, Jack Phillips, the owner of the bake shop, appealed that to the Colorado State Supreme Court, as was his right of appeal. That court did not exercise its discretion to hear that appeal. And then he took that appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, which, in its infinite wisdom, decided to hear this case. And so this is a little bit of a breakdown just of what was the Masterpiece Cake Shop, the appellant appealing, you know, what was the losing case for him. What was he arguing at the U.S. Supreme Court? So he was arguing a lot of things, confusing and novel, kind of boils down to two things. Because obviously for the Supreme Court to care, he's got to kind of spin this as a violation of his federal constitutional rights. And so he argued that requiring him to make a custom wedding cake for a gay couple forces him to express approval of that wedding, and as such, of same-sex marriage, and that he can't be forced by the state of Colorado to engage in speech with which he disagrees. So that's a violation of his free speech rights. He, in the alternative, argued that likewise, making a custom cake for a gay wedding expresses approval of same-sex marriage, and that forces him to violate his religious beliefs, and that's a violation of his right to free exercise of his religion, including in the operation of his business. So, you, oh boy. Let's see. No. You might wonder which of these super smart arguments the U.S. Supreme Court was persuaded by. And the answer is really neither. You may have read about this case that the decision was very odd and vague and didn't really give much guidance on how anti-discrimination laws and constitutional rights should coexist, how courts should evaluate claims like this. What happened was, and this was issued last year in June, by a 7-2 vote, joined the then conservative majority, joined by Justice Kagan and Breyer. They more leaned towards the free exercise of religion argument, but they didn't hold that enforcing the law against him violated his free exercise rights. They, and Justice Kennedy wrote this opinion, they held that the process by which his case was reviewed showed an impermissible hostility towards his religious beliefs, and that violated his free exercise rights under the federal constitution. So a couple of just kind of somewhat ancillary seeming facts that really featured significantly in Kennedy's decision that he found significant was that this whole thing took place, like I said, in 2012 before the Obergefell decision came down, and so you know, he was really sort of persuaded, or he thought it was significant that the context surrounding the bakery's conduct was, hey, this was like illegal in Colorado at the time, so, you know, give the guy a break. Like, his opinion at the time was, you know, an order of magnitude less abhorrent than it is today, kind of a thing. Number two, that there were comments that amounted to the impermissible hostility that the decision maker showed towards Phillips's beliefs, and that those comments by individual commissioners that reviewed the case were made without objection by the other commissioners and were not disavowed by the state in subsequent appeals. These were individual comments made by individual commissioners
at various points in the appeals process, but not not necessarily related to the findings that were made. And of course, there were several layers of review of this. And then, of course, in the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, at the same time these cases were winding their way through the courts, there were Christian, what I call trolls, but which are, in the real civil rights context, would be thought of as testers, which is a perfectly legitimate way to make sure that civil rights laws are being adhered to, and testers play a very legitimate role in making sure that the enforcement of civil rights laws is ongoing. So the typical tester would be, you know, a person who shows up, you know, in the early civil rights era, or even now, a tester would be, you know, a black renter and a white renter would call, inquire about an apartment. They would show up, you know, separately for their rental appointments, and then, you know, the rental agent would drive off, you know, when the black applicant was standing there, and, you know, would be treated differently. The black applicant would be treated differently than a white applicant. And, you know, that's sort of a setup, but they're doing testing to really, because it's the only way to really sort of make sure that these things aren't going on in the business community. And so, of course, the religious evangelical right has perverted this into trolling around to businesses asking for abhorrent things to be written on a cake, and then filing a complaint alleging that service was denied to them based on their identity as a Christian. And so that was happening in Colorado at the time. There was this guy going around to various bakeries in the Denver metro area asking them to bake a cake that would say, you know, something like, you know, gays with a red circle and a line through it, or God hates fags, or, you know, horrible things that would express an opinion about same-sex marriage, and I suppose in his mind were his religious beliefs on a cake. So when bakers would say, no, I really don't want to make that cake, he would file a complaint with the CRC in Colorado alleging discrimination on the basis of his religion. The Colorado CRC, of course, dismissed those complaints as, you know, finding no probable cause that discrimination was committed because he wasn't denied service based on who he was or his religion, but based on the product he was requesting. Although his trolling efforts were rewarded by Justice Kennedy, who found it compelling that his complaints were treated or were dismissed, were treated disparately by the Colorado CRC, sort of indicating some sort of bias by the Colorado Civil Rights Commission and the other state agents charged with reviewing the case. So I'm quoting here in full from one of the commissioner's comments that just really kind of won the day. So this was at an appellate review. The full Civil Rights Commission meets, they make a decision, it was already said and done. And then they all sort of, you know, pontificate like politicians do, and say things, and this was said on the record, although was not determinative of the case, which was then reviewed again by a Colorado Court of Appeals. And what this commissioner said, I think it was a she, was freedom of religion and religion has been used to justify all kinds of discrimination throughout history, whether it be slavery, whether it be the Holocaust, whether it be, I mean, we can list hundreds of situations where freedom of religion has been used to justify discrimination. And to me, it's one of the most despicable pieces of rhetoric that people can use to use their religion to hurt others. So one of the commissioners said this. No one objected significantly, and you know, they went on their merry way because the appeal was already ruled on. This was, you know, leaned on heavily in the briefing, and Justice Kennedy thought this was just so, displayed so much hostility towards Jack Phillips, the bakery owner,
You know, he broke it down word by word, Justice Kennedy did. It's like, it's so offensive on several levels. It's, you know, of course, you know, compared something to the Holocaust, which is like the ultimate, you know, Trump card of worst things you can compare something to. And then it called his religious beliefs rhetoric, which sort of indicates, you know, maybe they're saying they're not sincere, and called his beliefs despicable, and blah, blah, blah. So this showed an impermissible level of hostility from the commissioners towards the bakery's actions and beliefs. Never mind the fact that this statement is 100% true, but that was not persuasive. So ultimately, the court held that the bakery won. They won. They vacated the decision. They overturned it. So basically, he no longer violated the law. And the reason is because he was not given a fair constitutional process of review by the Colorado authorities. That process showed impermissible hostility towards his religious beliefs, and so the whole thing is invalid. But I think it's really important, and I think there's some bad information out there about what the case did not do, which is it did not in any way disturb existing law around anti-discrimination statutes, which exist in almost every state, except for, I think, five. And you know who you are. It's Texas, it's, Georgia, a few others on that list, but all but five. And of course, many municipalities, like Madison, have ordinances of their own, also providing usually broader protections than the Federal Civil Rights Act. Many states provide broader protections than the Federal Civil Rights Act, including Colorado. So after the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, states can still prohibit discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. And they can, businesses cannot sort of get a exemption from complying with those laws based on religion or speech rights. So places of public accommodation do not have a free exercise right to violate civil rights laws still after Masterpiece Cake Shop, even though the case sort of hinged on the free exercise clause as to why the process was unconstitutional. The court did not hold that just broadly businesses have religious rights to sort of ignore anti-discrimination laws. Also, the court did not hold that business owners have a free speech right to discriminate in violation of the law. But I do want to point out that the court didn't hold that, but the court didn't not hold that because Kennedy sort of indicated in dicta, you know, just non-binding language in the opinion, that things like this is a very tough question, there's ongoing tension between the free speech rights of business owners, and, you know, it's like on a spectrum. Some business owners their crafts are more, you know, closely aligned with something that might be considered expressive activity, and some clearly are not engaged in expressive activity. So, this is a tough question. We don't have to reach it here, but, you know, there might be something there. And I think Gorsuch and Alito, and maybe one other justice, concurred and actually would have found the free speech right persuasive, that basically buying the idea that selling a wedding service to a same-sex couple does sort of compel speech in the traditional way that that's thought of in other free speech cases. So the biggest thing after Masterpiece And the most infuriating thing about Masterpiece is it wasn't a case that needed to be taken by the U.S. Supreme Court. Obviously, they don't have to hear appeals, and they are very selective with which appeals they hear. And usually they hear appeals when there is disagreement in the lower federal courts about how an issue should be decided. Before Masterpiece, there was basic unanimity around the country regarding whether or not there are constitutional-based exemptions from anti-discrimination laws. And the answer is no. The answer was roundly no. Masterpiece just sort of confused an issue that wasn't really confusing to the lower courts and made it more confusing going forward, as many of these cases are still winding their way through the courts, because of course this litigation has been a concerted effort to undermine LGBTQ rights, particularly around marriage equality. And so Masterpiece was not the coup that they hoped for, but I do think it certainly created a lot of room for some of these other cases to be successful. So there's sort of, in my mind, two categories of cases right now that are still in the courts, and there's many more. I'm just sort of using as illustrations a few of the cases that I think are biggest in the news that you might have read about or you might read about in the next few months. So sort of one category are cases that are arguing the same thing Masterpiece Cake Shop argued, but think that they have better facts that a court might latch on to. They think that they present those arguments in sharper relief, and that the facts and the record is tighter, making their case more likely to succeed, but still arguing their free exercise, same thing. I have a free exercise right not to violate my religious beliefs and serving same-sex couples, and I have a free speech right not to engage in speech saying I approve of same-sex marriage. So Brush and Nib Studio is a pre-enforcement challenge, which means basically nothing has happened to them, but they want the courts to say that the law can't be enforced against them. It would be unconstitutional. They haven't actually violated the law. No one's made a complaint against them, but here we are. Brush and Nib Studio is maybe obviously a sort of invitation calligraphy business. They do all kinds of event invitations, including wedding invitations. They don't want to be forced to provide those services to same-sex couples for their weddings, and so they're suing the city of Phoenix. That case was, the oral arguments were just heard in that case before the Arizona Supreme Court. They're gonna make a decision on that, and we'll see where that goes. Certainly, if they continue to lose, I expect them to petition to the US Supreme Court again. The hoopla in the, same great guys that represented Masterpiece Cake Shop, ABF, is representing the Brush and Nib Studio owners, and they sort of think this presents a much stronger free speech claim because the services that they provide are more sort of closely aligned with what you might think of as creative expression, although invitations, I don't know. At oral argument, the counsel for the business was sort of asked, like, what if, you were presented with a wedding invitation order for a wedding, and it was, absolutely identical, like wedding of Pat and Tony, and one was straight and one is a gay couple. And, everything else about the design is the same, the actual words and calligraphy on the page, what then? And their argument is, of course, well, I still have a free speech right, not to serve that Pat and Tony, but to only serve that Pat and Tony. And of course, as they must make that argument, because it's not about the content, but they want the court to sort of view the fact that there is content and expressive activity in their, the services that they provide. They sort of want the courts to see that and say, whoa, this, yes, this is commercial activity, but it's also expressive. And so it's in that gray area and it deserves free speech protection. But of course, for the purpose of who they can discriminate against, you know, they want to be able to discriminate regardless of what the content would be. You know, controversial in the Masterpiece Cake Shop case was that basically no design was discussed before service was denied to Charlie and David, the couple from the first slide. It was just kind of like, hey, we're wedding cake shopping, and it was like, no thank you. So, you know, that kind of morphed as it made its way through the courts, where Jack Phillips thought, okay, it's probably expedient to make it my argument that I will sell off-the-shelf goods, non-custom goods, to gay people and gay couples, even for their wedding. You can have these, you know, this sheet cake or whatever is sitting there non-custom. But I reserve my custom goods, you know, that's where all my expressive artistic activity happens. That is reserved for, you know, things that I want to approve of, i.e. not your marriage. And so, you know, they've sort of, trial and error, kind of tried to sort of hew closer to things that relate to custom goods, things that involve some sort of artistic talents or artistry, things like that. There's cases ongoing right now with photography businesses, you know, not doing as well are like the bed and breakfasts and the hotel reception halls, because, you know, they're nowhere near convincing on the spectrum of, like, are they engaging in expressive activity. Of course, this is all BS, but there it is. Klein versus Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries is a case also about a bakery completely sort of just retrying the old Masterpiece Cake Shop playbook, except Sweet Cakes by Melissa is the business, now out of business because, oh, maybe I'm thinking of another case. Anyway, point is, they only make custom cakes. So they think that that puts them in a stronger position than Jack Phillips was, because, you know, there's no mess about with whether or not they make off-the-shelf goods. And they actually have been losing all the way through in Oregon, and the Supreme Court is currently considering whether or not to take their appeal. So they have a petition pending, and it has not been rejected, so the court could hear this again if they wanted to clarify Masterpiece. Of course, the makeup of the court has changed since Masterpiece. We know that Kennedy is gone. You know, hero of LGBTQ rights that he fancied himself, but of course now we have Brett Kavanaugh on the court, who there's no telling what his views on this would be, but I have some guesses. So also after Masterpiece, some of the cases that are working their way through the courts have been able to sort of pivot to, okay, what does Masterpiece mean in the context of my case, and how can the ruling in Masterpiece sort of be applied to what happened to me so that I can win? And the biggest case sort of pushing that theory is Arlene's Flowers versus the state of Washington, which was pending before the Supreme Court at the same time as Masterpiece. Once the court decided Masterpiece, they sent this case back to the Washington State Supreme Court to be decided, sort of reviewed again in light of their decision in Masterpiece. So the flower shop owner here is hammering hard that she was subject to religious hostility. You know, the Washington, I don't know, like Attorney General, like said stuff in the media, and they assessed like a big fine against her, and there's all this hostility. Of course, there is a lot of hostility amongst lawmakers, especially in these more progressive states and cities. There is some sort of hostility expressed towards the idea of class-based discrimination. And so there's a lot to sort of go on there, except it's not religious hostility. It's hostility towards people with abhorrent, you know, discriminatory practices. And they've been able to sort of manipulate that in the minds of a majority of Supreme Court justices. And now that's the threat going forward in some of these cases where they're arguing, okay, in light of Masterpiece, I've been subject to the same type of hostile, religiously hostile process. Okay, I don't know how long that's been. I want to take questions from you or just let you guys guide the conversation a little bit. You need a mic. Can't talk without a mic.
That's what destroys your pants.
And we'll kind of see where it goes. And if there are no questions or there are only a couple of questions, there's certainly more I could say about any of these cases and Masterpiece.
Hi.
Hello.
Well, question about the, was it the Nib and Brush case?
Mm-hmm.
How do they have standing if there's been no violation?
Yeah, oh, got a legal nerd in the audience there, hey. So he asked, how do they have standing to sue if this is a pre-enforcement challenge? Basically, to boil down what that question means is there's this legal fiction, frankly, in the courts that says you have to, well, it's sort of inherent in the idea that you have to have suffered an injury in order to sue. You can't just sort of ask the courts to decide your abstract questions. And so kind of an offshoot of that, used by the courts frequently to dismiss our cases, is that you have to have, you have to be the one affected, and you, that means you have to have standing. That's very malleable by the courts in order for them to not hear cases that they don't want to hear. But these cases are in state court. They're not in federal court, so they are not always subject to, you know, Article 3 and the places in the Constitution from where the standing doctrine supposedly inheres. So in the case of, I don't know jack about Arizona state law, but I'm guessing, as is the case here, you can bring a pre-enforcement challenge to a statute that on its face would be unlawful to enforce against you. At least I know that's been done in the state of Wisconsin. So I'm assuming the answer is state law, and I don't know. But it's not a case in the federal courts where, if it were, they would have a problem with Article 3 standing. Obviously, it's made its way all the way through the state court system, and so that's a non-issue. Of course, it doesn't put them in a very favorable light, because who knows whether or not they've just been discriminatory in the past or not. My guess is some of these businesses have served same-sex couples in the past and have only, you know, I don't know, they're, you know, part of a greater movement driven by some of these religious liberty law organizations that are really driving the strategy in the courts to undermine anti-discrimination laws in order to retard the progress of marriage equality and, you know, keep their view of same-sex marriage sort of culturally accepted. Mics.
Regarding Masterpiece, you had said that the court had decided that they would support the Masterpiece business because the commission would appeared prejudiced. I'm not sure if that's a word, but they appeared prejudiced during their processing of the complaint. And you had voiced that you know, the comments, some of the comments made, you thought were actually fairly legitimate. But I noticed that the Supreme Court passed their decision 7-2. So that would have included some traditionally liberal judges. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so very, very confusing concurring opinion written by Elena Kagan that really read like a dissent. She wrote separately, so now we're kind of, I don't know how many lawyers are in the room or just we're getting a little technical, but concurring opinion is, you know, seven justices agreed with the overall conclusion. Many of them wrote their own separate opinions just to say, you know, here's what I think differently or what I would have done more or what I want to write separately just to say. Elena Kagan wrote separately. I'm not sure if she was joined by Justice Breyer, but she wrote separately to basically say, her opinion read like a dissent. I encourage you to read it if you're a nerd and have no life. She wrote separately to basically say the things that I said in the sort of we did not do this, or the court did not do this section, you know. She wrote separately to just sort of say that anti-discrimination laws are valid, they're constitutional even when enforced against people with a religious objection. She didn't really, shed much light on why she was joining the majority opinion, but she certainly expressed some reservations and her opinion, I think, illustrated some concerns with a broad application of this case. Just to get, like, you know, we get all conspiratorial in our, or conspiracy theorists, you know, in our FFRF offices, all inside baseball wannabes. But at the time, there was kind of a thought that the Trump v. Hawaii case, the Muslim ban case, was pending at the same time and being decided, you know, within weeks of the Masterpiece Cake Shop case. And there was a lot of theorizing that sort of maybe their votes in that case was sort of a trade-off for some sort of, you know, what was going to be some sort of a favorable Kennedy swing in the Muslim ban case. Of course, that none of that came to be, and the courts have gotten more conservative since then. But, there's no real telling. I mean, yes, that's me editorializing about whether or not that comment was fair. I suppose Kennedy didn't really grapple with whether it was fair, just that he thought it was hostile. It showed hostility towards his religious belief that same-sex marriage is, you know, wrong, sin, whatever. I really read that comment as being more like, it's certainly hostile towards the practice of using your religious views in order to engage in unlawful discrimination. I mean, you might think that's hostile too. Justice Kennedy obviously did. But that's how I read it. And certainly Justices Ginsburg and Sotomayor dissented from this opinion. And again, nerds should read that dissent, because of course there's plenty of words spilled over why the focus on that comment, and also that comment is perfectly fair, and also that comment is a comment in a multi-layered review process that is, it's a bizarre thing to focus on, anyone who's ever practiced criminal law, when you're trying to get an appellate court to sort of look at an isolated comment and draw a broader conclusion about the bias that comment shows. You know, a lot less willingness from appellate courts to sort of read into one decision maker's, you know, comment and therefore vacate an entire decision based on the fact that that showed an unconstitutional bias. That's a remarkable thing. It happened here for whatever reason, many of which I will never know.
Hi. Under current law, is religion the only tool you could use to refuse service if it was a KKK wanted their letters on a cake decorated with nooses? Would that be different if a cake shop said, "I'm not making that"? Is religion the thing that makes this special?
Okay. So that's a great question, and it kind of gets at the confusion in these factual situations and what do the laws prevent. So threatening. Yellow card. Right. Anti-discrimination laws prevent different things depending on what law it is. So there's the Federal Civil Rights Act, which prohibits discrimination in places of public accommodation. That has a definition. It's much more narrow at the federal level, and then states and municipalities can broaden that to protect in any way they want. That doesn't run afoul of the federal constitution. So Federal Civil Rights Act only limits discrimination on the basis of in retail places, and that definition is narrow as well, but it's on the basis of race, religion, national origin, or something else that's not sex, gender, or sexuality.
Disability?
No. Race, religion, national origin, and ethnicity. Yeah, so all in the same kind of bucket, but religion. Then Colorado, in its legislative judgment, chose to broaden that. In the state of Colorado, you can do business open to the public, but you cannot discriminate on the basis of those four things and a whole bunch of other things. you know, and with Madison as a municipality has a very broad anti-discrimination law too. It could be marital status, it could be veteran status, it could be sexual orientation, it could be, you know, yes, in Madison, non-belief, in Portland, only places I know of. So first the discrimination has to be for the reason of that person's status as a member of that group. So KKK, refusing to be like, I am not gonna make a cake with a swastika on it, I'm sorry, I will not do that. Even if it's because I'm Jewish, I'm the cake maker and I'm Jewish in no way, that's not discrimination on the basis of the customer's religion. That's just, I don't wanna make your cake. That's how the Colorado dispensed with the, you know, trolling tester. That's not on the basis of a protected class in the law. Where the manipulation happens is, you know, the bakery and these religious right groups that are defending them are arguing that, saying, hey, gay couple, I am not going to sell you a wedding cake. And it's not because you're gay. Because, you know what, I'll sell you cupcakes for your birthday party. I'll sell you, you know, a cake for your retirement party. I'll sell you anything you want in this whole bakery, but I will not sell you a three-tiered wedding cake for your wedding or anything for your wedding because, you know, I don't want to sort of express approval of your whatever lifestyle, something in you know, in my own beliefs. So, isn't that the same thing with the swastika? I mean,
racists are a protected class.
Right, it's the customer's status. Yeah. So I think, you know what? I think conservative judges find that very persuasive, the argument that I just said, and would be like, hey, that's similar. Justice Kennedy obviously found some similarity between, you know, the guy who was trolling and what's happening with Jack Phillips. I just think it's very...
The difference is that the gays are a protected class and the houses are not. That's the difference.
The difference is the proprietor will sell a three-tiered wedding cake to Pat and Tony. They will not sell a three-tiered wedding cake, same exact good or service, to the gay Pat and Tony. That is not, you know, I won't make a KKK cake, not for you, not for you, not for gay you, not for anybody. But if you are holding out a line of goods and services that to the public, that you will not offer to this class of people that Colorado has decided to protect with their anti-discrimination law, you are violating the law. So that is as clear as anything and has been since the civil rights era. Of course, there's nothing new about arguing religious exemptions to civil rights laws. It was done with race. You've heard me say enough. Ask your questions.
A heterosexual couple walks into their bathroom.
You're not with the microphone. They're gonna kill you.
So please don't speak if you don't have the mic.
Sorry. What if a heterosexual couple walks into Masterpiece? They're really into. They really want to support gay marriage, and so they want to print a cake that says, "We're getting married, and all our gay friends should be able to get married too."
It's gonna be a big sheet cake.
I'm just saying, now it's not my protected class.
Right, and I think you're right. That's right. That presents a different situation.
Right, because by your argument, it would seem like the cake maker could say, yeah, I'm not going to print that cake.
Quite right.
That's against my religion.
I think that's quite right. I think that's where the line is. Not okay. Where, you know, not where ADF wants it to be. Or, you know, not where the Masterpiece Cake Shop wants it to be. The key fact in Masterpiece to me was that there was no design request or discussion about design. This was a line of goods unavailable to the gay couple that is sold to straight couples. That's a status-based discriminatory business practice. Other questions?
I think we have time for about one more, and that person is going to be getting it. So this will be our last question.
I better make a multi-question.
Part one.
Two things. Am I understanding correctly that a federal lawsuit is going to have more impact on a Supreme Court ruling than a lawsuit brought by the state, one. And two, given the change in the court and Justice Roberts' kind of adoption of the ACA, do you think he would also not strike down the marriage equality law?
So one word answer on the first part is yes, federal, you know, a federal ruling would have a broader impact than a state ruling. State rulings are only gonna, state Supreme Court rulings are only gonna be, you know, binding on that jurisdiction. As for Justice Roberts, I'm not a person who thinks Justice Roberts is a friend of the LGBTQ community. He joined the majority happily in the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, didn't express any reservations about that. So I don't think it looks great for another case coming to SCOTUS. I think they would take another case that was in order to make things worse, not better. So I think they would take one of these cases with narrower facts and chip away more, I think, at anti-discrimination laws as applied to LGBTQ, citizens. Because, of course, there are cases on the books right now where people argued these same arguments in, 1972. Bob Jones University argued this back in the, 80s or whatever, about race-based discrimination. It violates their religion and they have a right to refuse service on the basis of race. There are cases on the books right now that are, good case law that say that is not a constitutional reason why you can violate anti-discrimination laws. The courts have to make a distinction, have to somehow distinguish between that and sexual orientation, discrimination based on sexual orientation. I don't see the difference, but there's certainly arguments being made that there is a difference. I guess that's it. Thank you.